Beloved, please turn with me to Acts chapter 24. And as you've noticed, I've already mentioned this once already prior to turning on the microphone here, that we're now seeming to pick up a little steam as we look into this portion of the book of Acts. We spent considerable time, and that was done on purpose. Okay, it was done on purpose, so there's no apology given. We spent a little bit more time looking at Paul's journeys. We looked at the cities. We looked at some of the historical background to those cities. We looked at what was Paul saying there in the synagogue. We even stopped and took a much closer look at certain words that were being used, or certain theological thoughts that Paul was bringing when he was in the synagogue or when he was confronted by his adversaries. Now that his third journey is over, he's in Jerusalem. He gets himself in a whole lot of hot water, okay? The religious leaders have placed themselves under a curse, no food, no drink at all, until they actually kill Paul. And then last Sunday, this plot to kill Paul was overheard by Paul's nephew. Now, how Paul's nephew happened to be in earshot, we don't know. You know, what is Paul's nephew doing there? What type of relationship did Paul's nephew have that he's actually in that particular building where Paul was being incarcerated and heard this plot by the religious leaders? The nephew goes to the Roman official, who drops that dime after Paul tells him to do so. And that centurion moves heaven and earth, if you will, with a bunch of soldiers to get him from Jerusalem to Caesarea and to have him there under lock and key, safe from this assassination plot. But at the same time, the Roman official writes a letter to the governor, Governor Felix at the time. And we're going to look at Felix here briefly. Who was he? Okay. And Felix is going to give Paul his day, his day in the sun, along with the religious leaders, who hire a slick-talking lawyer. Isn't that amazing? Jesus didn't have too many nice words for lawyers. If you don't believe that, read Matthew 23. But they get a slick lawyer. And this slick lawyer is going to butter up Felix, okay, when they make their accusations. So that's where we're going, okay? But before we do so, I want to read a few things. So I want everyone's undivided attention. One of the thoughts that's been plaguing my mind, I'm currently reading a book entitled The New Book of Christian Martyrs. This is like a follow-on to Fox's Book of Martyrs. And it's entitled The Heroes of Our Faith from the First Century to the 21st. And it takes you in time segments. And I'm currently reading, I've already gone through when Islam was moving across North Africa and moving into Southern Europe, like Greece, modern day Serbia, that part of the southern part of the European continent, and when the Muslims conquered Spain. And beloved, guess what? It was around the late 700s, early 800s, that a major battle was fought, the Battle of Tours in southern France, that the so-called Christian knights, quote-unquote, halted the Muslim invasion into Northern Europe. That's how close Europe became in becoming Islamic and not Christian. Late 700s, early 800s, Christian knights stopped the Battle of Tours, T-O-U-R-S, I'm maybe butchering French, but the Battle of Tours, a very famous battle, okay, at that time. But in this book, I'm reading where the Roman Catholic Church is massacring, butchering, burning alive people that were called the Waldensians or the Albigenses or the Cathari. The Roman Church went bonkers with these people. And some of the things that they did to them will literally make your toes curl. But I want to read the dust cover this part here, which tells you about the book. Paul is being persecuted. Let's be upfront and honest. Paul is being persecuted for simply preaching what? Good news. And beloved, we are now living in a moment in American history where Christianity is no longer favorable to the masses. You need to realize that. Hollywood, the media, the politicians, the Democratic Party, more specifically, death on Christianity. If the movers and shakers could have their way without too much blowback by the populous people, just the common Joe Doe, they would right now, if they had their way and if they could do it, eradicate Christianity from America. If they can get away with it. All they've been able to do is nitpick at it by passing laws now in the past 4 years. Things that were once kept in the closet are now marching down Main Street. See, now, beloved, the cat's out of the bag. These people who were once in the shadows working in darkness have now come out in the light. Now they're not afraid to tell you that they want to get rid of you. And they're doing it as much as they can, kind of, you know, under the radar, using the laws, twisting our Constitution, and doing it, beloved, by executive order, by shoving it into the public schools, and parents really have no say. This war that's going on, this spiritual battle, beloved, is going on. And guess what? Y'all going to be the target. So we need to wake up. We need to wake up and realize that we're in a spiritual battle. Let's get out of our stupor. Let's get out of our drunkenness, spiritually speaking, and come to realize that we're in a battle. Ephesians chapter 6, we don't fight against flesh and blood, but against these spiritual entities. Listen to this. By even the most conservative estimates, we are currently witnessing a wave of martyrs. George Weigel, a distinguished senior fellow of the Ethics and Public Policy Center, states, quote, more Christians died in the faith in the 20th century than the previous 19 centuries of Christian history combined. Has that sunk a bit? Has that entered the depths of your mind? More Christians have died in the 20th century than all the Christians died together in the first 19 centuries. He states that Christians are obligated to be in solidarity with the persecuted church during this, quote, the greatest ever of persecution in Christian history. The assault on the Christian faithful today is ongoing, extensive, and heart-rending, unquote. The authors of this book have interviewed many surviving family members and friends of modern martyrs. We have pored over pages of historic Christian texts. Even retelling of these deaths invokes emotion, usually pride, and often questions about how to tell the world what is actually happening. This work is especially inspired and at points draws directly from Fox's Book of Martyrs, but it also includes accounts from the other works and traditions and a recounting of some of the most impactful modern martyrdoms. John Fox wrote not only about martyrs in ancient history, but also about those in his day, and as we have done. He believed the world needed to know about these heroes of the faith and to venerate their stories. The perpetrators needed to have their names recorded in infamy and the victims sacrificed inscribed with glory for future generations to remember them. Fox devoted his career to this objective so that his world and all who follow might know. Our world needs a fresh reminder as we endure this global phenomena of Christian persecution. Now, Just bear with me. Let me read to you an account. The Waldensians and the Albigenses, these were people in northern Italy, in the Alps, and in Switzerland and southern France. They were prolific. The Waldensians made their own translation of the Bible, and they used the traditional Greek text, the same text that underlines your King James translation in English. The Catholic Church considered these people heretical, both during the era and by current standards of orthodoxy. This is not the case with Peter Waldo, who became, his followers were called Waldensians after his name Waldo, Peter Waldo, and his followers, who were more of a nuisance to the official church. The Waldensians were more a bee in the bonnet of the Pope at that time. In both cases, countless people died due to their radical beliefs. These persecutions would last for centuries in other regions. John Fox, though listing the Cathai or the Albigenses as heretics, seemed to represent their plight as Christians in radical teachings. In the year 1620, that should be a familiar year in your history, the same time the Mayflower was docking in Massachusetts Bay, the persecution against the Albigenses was very severe. In 1648, a heavy persecution raged throughout Lithuania and Poland. We're not talking now of southern France and northern Italy. These people were also prolific in modern-day Lithuania and the modern-day country of Poland. The cruelty of the Cossacks, and some of you may have had some ancestors here in the past who were fleeing for the same people, was so extensive that the Tartars themselves were ashamed of their barbarities. Among those who suffered was Reverend Adrian Chakalisky, who was roasted alive by a slow fire, whose sufferings and mode of death may depict the horrors which the professors of Christianity have endured from the enemies of the Redeemer. He was cooked in an oven, slow cooked, to enjoy the smell of his own flesh being cooked. Beloved, what would prevent anyone from doing that to you right now? Oh, we're civilized. Really? If we're so civilized, what about an abortion clinic that slices and dices a human being and then reassembles those pieces on a table like a jigsaw puzzle to make sure that all the evidence has been removed from the womb? Are we really that civilized? Acts 24, verse 1. And after 5 days, Ananias the high priest descended with the elders and with a certain orator named Tertullus, who informed the governor against Paul. Some say that this cat was a lawyer. Here the scripture tells us he was a good orator. You know what that means? He knew how to spin a yarn. He knew how to rattle the cage of an audience. He was an orator. He could use rhetoric. In the ancient world, rhetoric was a prize. Matter of fact, Augustine, before becoming a Christian and a bishop and a prolific writer and a theologian, as a young man, he wanted to go to school in order to be an orator, in order to use rhetoric and winning an argument in public. And so this is who this cat is. Slick talker, able to use words, able to fan the audience, able to move people. And when he was called for, Tertullus began to accuse Paul, saying, now please, watch the words. First, you gotta butter up the governor. Seeing that by thee, he's talking to Felix, we enjoy great quietness. Now I want you to file that. Quietness. And that very worthy deeds are done unto this nation by thy providence. I want you to focus on those words in verse 2. Please. We accept it always. Oh man, it's gone now from butter to butter and jelly. And in all places, most noble Festus, with Felix, with all thankfulness. So we're going to stop there. Notice how Tertullus is just laying on the butter and the jelly and the hot tea. He is simply smoothing Mr. Felix. But he says about Mr. Felix that during your governorship, just like Pontius Pilate, now he was the governor of Judea, Felix, just like Pontius Pilate, over the same region. But notice he's living in, basically hanging out in Caesarea. That was his major headquarters. Now he might have traveled down to Jerusalem every so often, just like Pontius Pilate did. But listen carefully about Mr. Felix, okay? He was the procurator or the governor of Judea, Felix, who was a free man of the Empress Antonia, was the administrator of Samaria and probably of Judea proper also. As early as the time of the procurator Caminus, the two procurators almost went to war with each other during the conflict that broke out between the Samaritans and the Galileans. But Cumanus also was recalled. Felix was thereupon appointed sole procurator of Judea by Emperor Claudius in the year 52. On the suggestion of the high priest, Jonathan, who had gone to Rome with other nobles on account of the Samaritan disturbance. So are you with me? And this is verified by Josephus. The prior governor was a man named Cumanus. And some hubbub rose up between the Samaritans and the Galileans, where it got out of hand, and Cumanus was recalled back to Rome. Bad boy, bad boy. But did you hear what I just read? The high priest at that time was a man named Jonathan. He went to Rome with a bunch of nobles, and they suggested Felix become the next governor. Seems like the religious leaders, as I mentioned in other lessons, it seemed that the religious leaders at the time and the Romans had a very sweet relationship. The high priest booking all the way to Rome to be amongst dogs and Gentiles, and to deal with Emperor Claudius. Claudius was Nero's uncle, and Claudius was now on the throne. Claudius had a very bad stuttering problem, and he also walked with a limp. Okay? He would stutter, and he had a very pronounced limp whenever he walked. So Jonathan goes to Rome with other nobles on account of this hubbub. Felix was also entrusted with the entire military command, as Suetonius and Victor distinctly point out. Felix exercised as Tacitus. Tacitus was a Roman historian. So all this is basically being buttressed. When we read about this Felix in Acts 24, it's not a made-up story. That was a real live individual. Related to Claudius by a former marriage. So Felix was related to the emperor by marriage. Immediately on entering office, now what did we read? Great quietness. Worthy deeds. And boy, we're so thankful of you. Okay, listen. Immediately becoming the governor, he alienated the affections of the Jewish princess Drusilla, sister to Agrippa II. We're going to meet her up in the next chapter. From her husband. During his term, okay, let me also read. On the other hand, he tolerated the much more formidable people. He used them for his own purpose. As, for instance, in the murder of Jonathan, the high priest gets himself killed. He also proceeded rigorously against and would-be prophets that were distributing the peace with their fanaticism, especially against this Egyptian Jew who, with several thousand followers, attempted to drive the Roman garrison from Jerusalem. Remember in the last chapter, the Roman guard that was with Paul? What did the Roman guard? Are you that Egyptian? Remember that? I just read it to you as a historical fact. All this commotion with this so-called Egyptian Jew who was going to lead this attack against the garrison, the fortress Antonia, there in Jerusalem, and that was squelched and then put down, that was that Roman soldier. Are you that Egyptian? Are you that rabble-rouser that wanted to assault the garrison? I'm telling you, it's history. During his term, the Apostle Paul was taken prisoner at Caesarea, Acts 24. A fierce contest arose at that time between the Jewish and the Syrian citizens of Caesarea. And as Felix acted unjustly towards the Jews, he was recalled by Nero in 60 AD. When you read the history of Mr. Felix, he was ruthless, he was cruel. He would simply kill you before getting any kind of adjudication. Beloved, he was a monster. And yet, Tertullus says, seeing that by thee we enjoy great quietness, and that very worthy deeds are done unto this nation by thy providence, and we accept it always. They didn't. And in all places, most noble Festus, with all thankfulness. So if you're taking notes, this guy was the governor between 52, 53 to 60 AD. Okay? So he would be eventually recalled by the time Paul is on his way to Rome to do his two-year house arrest, which we will study in Acts chapter 28. We just got verification that there was an Egyptian Jew who was leading an insurrection at the same time during this guy's governorship. And that's the same Roman soldier was asking Paul when the Jews were going nuts and beating him there in the temple complex, are you that Egyptian? Are you that rebel rouser that wanted to attack this fortress and drive the Romans out of Jerusalem? Isn't that amazing? He was very cruel and very mean. His term of office was riddled by continual troubles and seditions, uprisings by the people. Jonathan, the high priest, who went to Rome and told Claudius, we want Felix to be the governor, he was killed during his governorship, the governorship of Felix. And so, beloved, I want you to look at that on purpose. Because, beloved, we have people today, especially politicians, who tell us only what we want to hear, what they want to tell us. They will not tell you the truth. Tertullus here is a bone-faced liar. Felix was a terrible governor, very terrible. So much so that when Nero became emperor after his uncle died, poisoned by Nero's mama, according to the record, he was recalled. So now Paul stands before Felix and the members of the Sanhedrin that have come down. Notice verse 1. After 5 days, so after five days after Paul was whisked off to Caesarea, and they got that curse upon them, we're not going to eat, we're not going to drink until we kill this man, the Roman soldier, the one in charge, rescues Paul, whisks him in the early morning hours of that morning off to Caesarea, gives them to Felix with that letter that we read last week. Okay? So he dumps them off in Felix's lap. 5 days later, this entourage, Ananias the high priest, descends with the elders, and they bring this clown, Tertullus, to be their spokesman. All right? Felix was eventually replaced, listen carefully, by Porcius Festus. Festus will be the next character that Paul will stand in front of eventually. Felix was spared death by Nero because by Felix's brother, intercession in 60 AD. I'm giving you some history. When Felix does go back because he's recalled by Nero, Nero wanted to kill him. Because again, what does the Roman Empire want? Peace and unity at all cost. Pax Romana, the peace of Rome. Well, when you have commotions going on in the eastern regions of the empire, that vibrates all the way back to Rome. And so Felix is spared. Felix's wife was Drusilla. Drusilla, Herod Agrippa's daughter, and that was Felix's third marriage. So a man with three marriages, you got to kind of look at him and look with a little bit of suspicion. Okay? Now, let's proceed. Tertullus, this orator, speaks first. He brings these accusations on behalf of the religious leaders before Felix. Tertullus's job is to make the Apostle Paul look so odious that he needs to be removed from off the planet. That's all that this guy is hired. He's hired to paint a picture of the Apostle Paul to such a degree, and knowing that Felix himself is ruthless and cruel, they knew that they had somebody that if maybe you just pushed a few buttons, he would have ordered, as the governor, Paul's demise. Snap of a finger. So notice, these cats are wise. They picked the right governor. They picked the right man who's basically evil to the core. Even though Tertullus butters him up in those first couple of verses. Ready? Verse 4. Notwithstanding. So after buttering, now Tertullus brings the ice cubes. That I be no further tedious unto thee. Notice, he's still buttering. I pray thee that thou wouldest hear us of thy clemency a few words. I mean, man, oh, Tertullus is just dripping. For we have found this man a pestilent fellow. Now, what's the root of that word? He's a pest. And beloved, what do you do with a fly or a mosquito that just simply likes to dive bomb your food or circle your head or find a home in your ear? You squash it. You kill it. So they're calling Paul a pest. They're liking him to a fly or to a mosquito that needs to be eradicated. Eradicated. And guess what? There are those today, if they could have their way in America, they would eradicate you right now. And when you look at other parts of the world, especially in countries that are dominated by Islam, they are eradicating your brothers and sisters with no apology. They did it in the old Soviet Union. They're doing it now in China. And they've done it in North Korea. Ever since the 1950s. So, beloved, there's persecution that's out there. And I believe that Christians need to wake up and get out of the closet. Stop hiding in the closet and waiting for a rapture. Your enemy wants to remove you from off the planet. And Jesus told us to be wise as a fox, but harmless as a dove. You need to be wise, just like a fox, to realize you have enemies. And a mover of sedition among all the Jews throughout the world. Wow. Jesus told his disciples, I want you to go into all the world and preach the gospel, right? And when you make converts, I want you to baptize them in the name of the Father, Son, and the Holy Spirit. And then I want you to teach them what the things I've commanded you. To what degree does Tertullius tell us the expansion of Christianity by the late 50s? Paul was a mover of sedition among all the Jews throughout the world. And beloved, that was a fact, not hyperbole. That was a fact. And a ringleader of the sect of the Nazarenes. Wow. Now, it gets even better. Who also had gone about to profane the temple, whom we took and would have judged according to our law. Well, they were almost pounding him to death when that Roman soldier intervened. But the chief captain Lysias came upon us. So there's the name of that Roman soldier. Great violence took him away out of our hands, commanding his accusers to come unto thee by examining of whom thyself mayest take knowledge of all these things whereof we accuse him. And the Jews, that would be the representatives of the high priest and the Sadducees and such, also assented, saying that these things were so. So there's the accusation. He is accused of sedition. He's accused of being a pest. He's accused of somehow threatening that beautiful second temple. And he's the ringleader of these Christians. And if it wasn't for your Roman soldier butting in, we would have judged them according to our law. That would have meant the rock pile. After they roughed him up in that beating that he received of them. Now, isn't it amazing that they mentioned the temple as the object of Paul's pestilent behavior? I want to share something with you. Look at Matthew chapter 26. Let's now cross-reference what Paul has now been accused of by his adversaries. And let's take a journey. Matthew chapter 26. Look at verse 59 to 63a. Now the chief priests and elders and all the council sought false witnesses against Jesus to put him to death. Ananias hires Tertullius to do the dirty work. In Acts 24, here, the elders, they're seeking false witnesses, but found none. Yea, though many false witnesses came, yet found they none. At the last came two false witnesses and said, this fellow said, I am able to destroy the temple of God and to build it in 3 days. And the high priest arose and said unto Jesus, answerest thou nothing? What is it which these witnesses against thee? But Jesus held his peace. Isn't it amazing that in Tertullius's accusation against the Apostle Paul, he brings up Paul apparently either bad-mouthing or about planning to do something to the temple that was standing there when Paul got to Jerusalem. Jesus, on the other hand, was accused as well. Oh, you're going to destroy this place, and then 3 days later you're going to go poof, you're going to build it back up again? Look at Mark 14, look at Mark's rendering. Mark chapter 14. I just found this interesting. When you compare the trial of Jesus, and now you're comparing Paul as he's on the hot seat. Mark chapter 14, look at verses 55. And the chief priest and all the council sought witness against Jesus to put him to death and found none. For many bear false witness against him, but their witness agreed not together. And there arose certain and bore false witness against him, saying, We heard him say, I will destroy this temple that is made with hands, and within 3 days I will build another made without hands. But neither so did their witness agree together. So Jesus is in a jam about certain words or certain things he hinted at in his teaching on the temple. Paul is also on the hot seat for saying something or probably mentioning something about the temple at that time. Isn't that amazing? Turn to John 19. John 19 and verse 12. John chapter 19 and verse 12. And from henceforth Pilate sought to release Jesus. But the Jews cried out, saying, If thou let this man go, thou art not Caesar's friend. Whosoever maketh himself a king speaketh against Caesar. So notice, the Jews now, in order to really rattle Pilate, says, Oh, he's claiming to be a king. I thought Caesar's our king. And if you let this guy go free, you ain't a friend of Caesar. Isn't that something bordering on your treason? Ain't they slick? When Pilate therefore heard that saying, he brought Jesus forth, sat down in the judgment seat in a place that is called the pavement, but in the Hebrew, Gabbatha, and it was the preparation of the Passover in about the sixth hour. And he said unto the Jews, Behold your king. Behold your king. But they cried out, Away with him! Away with him! A double whammy. Crucify him. Pilate said unto them, Shall I crucify your king? And the chief priest answered, We have no king but Caesar. Now that was a lie. But in order to get rid of Jesus, it was expedient to join the Caesar bandwagon. But it gets better. Now turn to Acts 7. Turn to Acts chapter 7. Look at verse 13. Acts chapter 7. Let's see here. Acts 6, I'm sorry. Acts 6. Remember Stephen? What was the accusation against Deacon Stephen? But look at verse 13. Ready? Well, let's go to verse 12. And they stirred up the people and the elders and the scribes and came upon him, Stephen, caught him and brought him to the council. That's the Sanhedrin, the same council that judged Jesus, the same council that Saul of Tarsus was working for. It is now the same council that he's standing in front of. And set up false witnesses. Notice the pattern. Which said, This man ceaseth not to speak blasphemous words against this holy place and the law. For we heard him say that this Jesus of Nazareth shall destroy this place, i.e., the temple, and shall change the customs which Moses delivered us. And all that sat in the council looked steadfastly on him, saw his face as it had been the face of an angel. Beloved, have you noticed a pattern? When they want to get rid of you, they got to have false witnesses. People who are going to lie. Look at former President Trump. Everything that the Democratic Party has thrown at him in order to prevent him from running on the ballot as our next president, hopefully. It's taken time, especially the January 6th revolt back in 2020. We're now finding out that that riot of January 6th was orchestrated by Hillary, Obama, and Pelosi. It was a lie. And then they drudge up all these women 30 years ago, 40 years ago that he fondled. It's amazing how these women's memories are so sharp 40 years after the fact. I can't even recall what I ate 40 years ago. False witnesses. So when it comes to them persecuting you, expect people to accuse you of saying things and doing things you never did. They have to assassinate your character and your name and your person. Have you seen the playbook? Acts 21. We're just looking at the playbook. It's almost as if the Democrats only read this portion of the Bible and then used it for their own techniques. Look at Acts chapter 21 in verse 21 and 28. Acts 21, verse 21, and I need to get there. And they are informed of thee, that thou teachest all the Jews which are among the Gentiles to forsake Moses, saying that they ought not to circumcise their children, neither to walk after the customs. They said the same thing about Stephen in Acts 6. Look at verse 28, same chapter. Crying out, men of Israel, this is the man that teacheth all everywhere against the people and the law. And what? This place, the temple. And further brought Greeks also into the temple and had polluted this holy place. Look at Acts 22. Verses 22 to 23. And they gave him audience unto his word, and then lifted up their voice and said, away with such a fellow from the earth, for it is not fit that he should live. And as they cried out and cast off their clothes and threw dust in the air, and that's when the chief, that's when that Roman official butted in to save Paul. And beloved, when you read Fox's Book of Martyr, when you read this other book that's now come out, when you read that, especially the Islam and the Roman Catholic Church, these two entities that attacked and killed your Christian brothers and sisters of a bygone era, they did it by false accusations. They accused them of things that they believed, but they didn't believe. They put words in their mouth they never said. They accused them of acts or actions or deeds they never did. And then the powers that be just rushed to judgment, like in the case of that one man, slow cook in an oven. Slow cook in an oven. Wow. So in this instance, the accusations were aimed about their own interpretations of the law in opposition of what Paul was advocating. And now the Jewish delegation in that verse 9, let's go back to Acts 24 as we close. We go back to Acts chapter 24. After Tertullian butters up the governor and says things that we know now from history are not true, Felix was cruel, he was mean, he was vindictive, and yes, he himself was recalled in the year 60 AD back to Rome, and Nero wanted to kill him. It was only by the intervention of Felix's brother that Nero didn't kill him. So after this clown butters up the governor, and then he gets all these accusations about the Apostle Paul, he's a pest. He needs to be removed. He needs to be squished. He needs to be squashed. Verse 9 will close. And the Jews also assented, saying, these things are so. So what are we going to do? Well, Lord willing, next week, the audience or the speaker now shifts from the slick talker and the head-bobbing religious leaders in verse 9 saying, it's all true, sir. Paul now steps up And it's his turn to give his two cents to this instance. Beloved, I just simply want to warn you that eventually this persecution that we're talking about may eventually come knocking on your door. It may come knocking on the heart of your life. And beloved, you need to be prepared. You need to be prepared. Because beloved, there are people right now, if they could have their little demonic way, you would be gone right now from off the planet. You, and there are, you are the pestilent individual that needs to be removed. We need to wake up and smell the aroma of persecution that's coming upon us. Amen.